Welcome. Thank you for coming to participate in the presentation of the global strategy, development strategy of Recordati and the objectives for the 2019 and 21 plan. You obviously already have insight, hello Ben, insight on these numbers because they were released in the press release following the board of directors yesterday. But obviously the plan today is to give you more color and information on what lies behind this this plan, both strategy-wise and the financial and sales assumptions-wise. So for those of you that don't know Recordati, because I know there are a few of you that don't know the company, I will go to slide four, please, Marianne, to give a quick profile of Recordati and what Recordati is today. Recordati is an Italian originating from Italy company, public company, obviously. We closed 2018 with 1.3 billion worth of sales, and we have 4,142 employees across the world. Company has two main business units. One is a specialty prime and primary care business unit, which makes up about 84% of our revenues, and the other one is for the treatment of rare diseases, which is 16% of our revenues. We are a well-known and well-positioned European player in specialty and pharma, primary care pharma, and also with a substantial part of our business in OTC, which we put into this part of our business. We have operations in the main European markets, in Russia, Poland, and other Central and Eastern European markets, and also in Turkey, an important country for us, and in North Africa. And we sell our proprietary drugs across our subsidiaries, obviously, but also through our partners and licensees across the world. For the for the rare disease business, we have a global presence. We've been pursuing a strategy of entering more markets in recent years in order to kind of register and sell our products directly and become really a global partner of choice for partnerships as well in order to license in and justify also more or better the M&A, let's say, activities in this area, because obviously in more the more markets we're present in and we can commercialize our products once they come to market, the better, for obvious reasons. So moving on, still on the next slide. No, sei troppo avanti, eccola. Going on the next slide, quick run through on the 2018 financial highlights. I'll be very brief because you know them very well. Our sales were up 5% on 2017. We closed with an EBITDA of 500 million euros, which equates to about 37% of on net revenues, which was up approximately 10% on the previous year. Operating income following more or less the same trend, and net income was up to 312 million with 23% of net revenues and up on 8% on the previous year. We closed with about 600 million or just below 600 million of net debt. We have a very diversified business both by our geography and by sales, and we think a very well diversified but balanced diversification. As I mentioned before, we have a presence in rare diseases, which make about 16% of our revenues. So we have a presence with the same amount of incidence in OTC. We have a local product portfolio, which accounts for about 20% of our sales. And this local product portfolio contains some key champions in those respective markets. And then, obviously, we have a franchise of corporate products. We're starting off from the lercanidipine franchise, our calcium antagonist for hypertension, which is about 13.3% of sales, going through to our statin, to our BPH product, Urorec, the recently acquired in 2017 beta blocker metoprolol from AstraZeneca, and then about 12.5% of other corporate products. We have presence, Italy is still an important country for us, 20% of sales. Germany follows, then France, then emerging markets in Russia, Ukraine, and CIS, followed by USA, which is predominantly a presence in rare diseases, and so forth. So just to give you a quick kind of insight on who we are today. Next slide, please. A history of growth. I think it's important to say a few brief words on our historical growth and expansion strategy in the years that brought us today. We were founded in 1926, and until the end of the 1990s, we were basically only in Italy and partially in Spain. Then in 1999, on the back of the success of lurkinidipine and the cash flow generation of this product, we started an expansion strategy, geographical expansion strategy, but not only, also an expansion portfolio strategy. With entry in France and followed by many other countries. And this was achieved through a mixture of organic development and inorganic development, but a well-balanced ratio of the two. Progressive coverage. So today we have we reached a progressive coverage of Western Europe, Central and Eastern Europe, like I mentioned before, and also some selective key markets around the Mediterranean basin and also all the way down to CIS, emerging markets in the CIS area. An important step in the company development was a diversification, strategic diversification to enter the rare disease segment in 2007 with the acquisition of our of Orphan Europe. This was obviously on the back of us wanting to diversify our portfolio and enter a very attractive market, both looking at the patient needs, because it's a market that obviously offers a lot of opportunity because of a high unmet medical need, like I will explain a bit better later on, and also to diversify the business because we think that diversification is one of the key strengths for the group. And we invested so in both in SPC and the rare disease business, we invested significant amount of capital in order to kind of reach the geographical footprint that we have for the two businesses today. Today, our specialty and primary care business is about 84% of revenues with 70% of EBITDA and is really focused on Europe and the Mediterranean basin, while the rare disease business is about 16% of revenues, 22% of EBITDA, and we consider it to be a worldwide presence. The next slide, again, to kind of continue with company profile, and I think it's important to say a few words on the strong margin expansion and the sales growth in the past 5 years. This has been a solid kind of growth, starting from the revenues, but also followed by an even stronger profitability growth and margin expansion, driven a lot by our very focused approach on leveraging, you know, assets that we acquire and put in our organization. And so we leverage the organization rather than follow the acquisitions with no synergies, let's say, or by adding structures in a non-focused way. This resulted, as you can see from the last graph on the right, with a lot of value creation for our shareholders. And we're planning to keep on doing this in the years to come. To finish off this, let's say, historical strong performance story, I think it's also important to mention that when we communicate our targets to the market, we've done it in 2013 with first three-year plan, then in 15 and in 17, we have always met or overachieved the targets we've given to the market. And the latest example is the 2017 plan, which obviously finishes with 2019, where you can see the revenues are in line with the 2019 plan communicated targets. But we're planning to overachieve on the profitability target. Next slide. Obviously, there was a big change. I need to mention this. There was a big change because it was an important transition for the Recordati group. In 2018, the family decided to sell the controlling stake in the company. I won't get into the details of that, but unfortunately, this happens in all, even the best families. Through a long process, a selection process, we found what we feel is the best partner to keep on kind of stepping into the shoes of the Recordati family as a controlling entity into of Recordati in order to assure the development of a group in the years to come. This is obviously CVC, Capital Partners, which, as you all know very well, is a leading private equity group. With a solid PE, private equity, and with a strong track record. They have a global network, they have a highly experienced management team, but more importantly, they have a dedicated healthcare team with strong global network and a long-standing track record of investing in this in the healthcare sector. So why did they choose Recordati? They chose Recordati, I think, because of the story that I just introduced with the previous slides, and because also of the prospects of the company in the years to come. I will remain as CEO, as it's already been announced, and here I am presenting as CEO. And I'm also reinvesting in the company. I'm reinvesting in the company, but not only myself, but also the top management of a company is reinvesting in the company alongside CVC and the co-investors of CVC. This is because we still believe there's a lot of strong potential for growth and development for the group. And so management is in place. The same management that was with the Recordati family is still in the company and is managing the company as before, and actually investing in the company, the top management, investing in the company because they believe in the prospects of the same. I think it was very important for the Recordati family to find a partner that would allow Recordati to remain an independent company to ensure continuity for management and employees. There is a strong commitment for CVC because a very important part of their investment thesis is a rare disease business. So there is a strong commitment for CVC Capital Partners to help us support and accelerate our growth strategy. And I think the numbers that you've seen released in the press release yesterday and which will be presented today go to show this. It's also an important note to mention that to reinforce and bring some further expertise, especially in the rare disease segment, Fleming Olskov, ex-CEO of Shire, that obviously exited Shire following the acquisition of Takeda, the same, has joined the board of Recordati as chairman, as non-executive chairman, and he brings Recordati with a solid expertise, track record, especially, as I said, in the rare disease segment. So we are very excited about this, of the contribution he would bring to the company. So now, before we get into the strategy of a three-year plan, since we also disclosed and announced the three-year first quarter results yesterday, following the board of directors, I will let Fritz, as customary, to introduce you to the first quarter results.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Good morning to everyone. I tried to do a very short presentation because I think the focus today is more on the first quarter result, is more rather than the first result, or more in the business plan. But I think to say that we are in line with our target, we are growing the company in the first quarter, is a very solid and good starting point for our business plan. And then you have seen by the press release yesterday that we continue to grow the business. Revenue grew by 4.5%, and this revenue included also the revenue generated by the company that we acquired last year. We have also been impacted by a negative currency exchange rate, which is mainly due to the different valuation of the Turkish lira first quarter 2014-2019. Overall, if we exclude all these items, the growth would have been of 3.2%, which means that we continue to have as a pillar for our growth both the organic business, which continue to grow 3.2%, plus the contribution that is linked to our acquisition. In particular, last year we acquired two companies, Natural Point in June and Tony Farm with his important brand in France at the end of the year. We are even increasing our margin in terms of EBITDA. Our margin of EBITDA grew by 7.1%, and now our EBITDA margin is at 37.6% of sales. Operating income, which remain at 32.9, in line with what we have achieved last year, with an increase of 4.5. This different performance between EBITDA and EBIT is also due to the acquisition. We are now acquiring essentially assets for which we have the amortization charges in our P&L. But in terms of net income, the growth of net income is of 6.4%, also thanks to lower level of financial charges and a bit lower tax rate. The tax rate in the first quarter was 24.5 compared to the 25% we had in 2018. Then solid financial performance in line with expectation, 4.5 growth of revenue. In terms of net debt, we continue to have a very balanced financial position. Net debt at the end of the period was 555.7 million, and this is only linked to the payment that we had in the first quarter for some milestone for the acquisition of Justapid in Japan and for the payment of the milestone for the acquisition of another product in license in our orphan business, which is Ledaga. Let me comment then, in the first quarter, we have also an increase on our debt by 25 million, which is linked to, I know, the very well-known first-time application of the IFRS 16. Overall, we continue to have a strong cash generation, which is in part invested in our BD activity, and we are very pleased by this milestone because it means that we have been able to continue reinforce, in this case, it was essentially the case on reinforcement of our orphan business. Regarding corporate development, the most important acquisition was the acquisition of the rights for Juxtapid in Japan. This is important because we have entered last year in Japan based on our current portfolio, and we are very pleased by this reinforcement of our Japan organization with the acquisition of the rights of Juxtapid. We can move on to the analysis of the main product, in which we can see that our Lercanidipine Plain continues to remain a very important asset in the business. We continue, even we have a slight growth in the first quarter. Zanipress is decreasing, and this is only due to the generic entry in all the markets, in particular in the France one, while Urorec and Livazo are continuing growing. Seloken, the product acquired from AstraZeneca, is essentially stable, which means that we've been able to stop the erosion. When we bought the product, there was an erosion trend. The product managed by our commercial organization has stopped the erosion. We believe that this is not a growing opportunity. It was an important margin expansion, but now we are able to keep the sale essentially stable. Rare disease growth is 2.4%, and this is due also to the competition of the generic version of Cosmogen in the United States. The Cosmogen generic entry in the first quarter last year, generic was less aggressive than was in the second part of the year than in the first quarter. The impact quarter by quarter was more important than has been we expect to be going forward, because after the first quarter in which there was an initial sale, then there was a substantially stable share of the business between us and the generic version of Cosmogen in the United States. We can now directly move on the composition of revenue by geography. The Italian business continued to grow also thanks to the consolidation of Natural Point, which has a very important brand, Magnesio Supremo, which is growing. Pharmaceutical in sales also is growing, also thanks to the acquisition of our product, in particular of the two brands, Gincor and Alodont, belonging to Tonipharm, the company we have acquired at the end of the year. In Germany, we continue to grow the business also thanks to the initial sales of Reagila. The German market is the first market in which we have launched in April last year, Reagila. Reagila is the product based on cariprazine with license from Gedeon Richter, which is an important product, new product in our SPC business. Revenue in Russia and the CIS, Ukraine and CIS market are down by 11.8%, and this is due to both, on the one hand, the exchange rate effect, but we have also had in Russia, also in local sales, a business which is decreasing in the first quarter. This is, let me say, only due to procurement policies of the main wholesaler, and the sales at the end of April are above last year. It's just due to phasing in our supplying the wholesaler, and we believe that our Russian business, also in local sales, could continue to grow at a high single digit as we did in 2018. In all the other, in Spain, we are growing. Let's comment on Turkey, because comments of Turkey is an important business. We have a very strong performance locally, 24.4%, which is driven by 28.4%, which is driven by both volume growth, but also price growth, price increase, because in February, there was a general price increase for all the company in Turkey. Sales in the U.S., these are only sales linked to the orphan business. As I said, this less 3.3% is due only to the generic competition of Cosmogen. Then we can move on slide in which we present our third quarter result. Revenue has been commented. The gross profit is slightly below. There is a slight decrease compared to that of last period, and this is due mainly to price and currency effect. While we continue to leverage the organization, we are reducing our SG&A expenses as a percentage of sales. We are, and that's the reason why we are keeping our operating margin the same level that we have achieved last year, and we are even slightly increasing the net income at 24.1%, and this is mainly thanks tax rate. Andrea asked me to underline, and I think it's important to underline that EBITDA is growing now. Our EBITDA is 37.6% of our revenue. Third operating segment, then in terms of segment, we are growing both the business and our, just to say that our EBITDA in the primary, specialty in primary care in the first quarter was 35.1%. And this is not one business unit which is growing in terms of profitability. Both are growing, and also in the specialty in primary care, we have a very solid and valid EBITDA. In terms of financial position, 555.7 million net debt financial position, as I have already commented, solid generation of cash flow, and we think that we have room starting from this financial position to pursue our M&A strategy, which will be financed by both the cash flow generation plus possible slight increase on our debt. Okay, then I...
Thank you, Fritz. So I will go on now with a three-year plan, and I will start with a company strategy slide. Marianne, please. Okay, before I, rather than starting from the top of the slide, I think it's important to mention that we feel that as a group, we are positioned well and exposed to positive macro trends. Obviously, an aging population is fueling higher healthcare expenditure, and there is a greater prevalence, obviously, of chronic diseases. Recordati's portfolio is weighted towards the sort of diseases, being in cardiology primarily, urology and gastrointestinal. We have a good exposure to emerging markets. Yes, obviously there is a FX kind of issue to kind of manage there, but the volume growth of these markets tend to kind of outdo this problem. So we are confident that being present in this market is a very good diversification and an important factor in driving growth for the group. And obviously, we are present in the rare disease area, which today, with about 500 approved drugs to date and 6,000 designated rare diseases, still offers large and a lot of opportunity to find new products for unmet medical need diseases, and clearly in develop this business further. So based on these premises, a group of objectives, a general group of objectives, are to continue the successful strategy that we have pursued to date. This is obviously steady organic growth from a well-diversified portfolio. I think that, as I mentioned before, diversification for us is a key strength factor for Recordati. It allows us to mitigate single risks or specific risks, both geographically and portfolio-related, and obviously enhance this growth with creative or strategic acquisitions, both in SPC and rare diseases. More specifically, in specialty and primary care, we want to maintain the steady volume-led growth from cash-generative core products, as you will see in the following slides, to continue reinforcing our current geographical footprint in order to remain a partner of choice for BD and M&A activities. We think that we are in Europe, in the regional kind of arena, one of a few specialty pharma companies with a strong footprint, both commercial and really a one-stop shop for partners looking for registering and commercializing the products in this market or in this region. We will continue leveraging additional kind of new products on the current organization, both in licensed products and products that we acquire. And we will obviously keep on reinvesting, like Fritz said, the cash flow into accretive acquisitions in this part of the business. Regarding the rare disease strategy, we will continue developing our portfolio, our global portfolio, like we've done recently. So bringing our products to new markets, like we've done in LATAM and in other parts of the world in recent years, but also obviously launching in new markets. And obviously we will focus on consolidating our presence in LATAM, where we entered in 2017, and in the Asia-Pacific region, where we entered in 2018. In the plan, we have included partially the Carbaglu organic acidemia launch in the USA and the Sister Drops launch in the USA, and also a continuous rollout of the same in the European and other markets. And obviously, we have also included in the plan the sales of Ledaga, the product for a license that we acquired from Helsinn end of last year. We will continue progressing our current pipeline. I think this is an important thing to mention, and I'll give a bit of insight on that further on in the presentation. But this pipeline is not, or better, the products being developed in this pipeline today are not in the plan because it will come to fruition post-2021. So there's no sales related to this product in the plan. And as Fritz mentioned briefly before, we will continue, which is, an important statement, to invest in targeted BD and M&A as well, like we did for Juxtapid and the BD for Ledaga. This will become an area of further focus in the years to come for Recordati in order to reinforce our global portfolio. And we think that we are very well positioned for this. So now a quick kind of run through the key assumptions around the key products in our portfolio. So starting off from the most important franchise in the SPC business, which is the lercanidipine franchise, which is basically made up of the monosubstance, zanidip, and the combination product with enalapril and zanipress. We expect the sales of zanidip to remain stable throughout the plan at 120 million going forward. This is a very important product from a cash generation point of view, as you know. And I think that the recent years have demonstrated that we have achieved this objective. So this is where we feel that we're going to be able to maintain the sales going forward in the plan. And even though we had an initial impact of zanipress generic impact in the recent 2 years, we think that we will be able, based on the experience that we built with zanidip, to actually stabilize the product around 60 million, the zanipress product. If you consider both brands, we sell 70% of all volumes across the world of this molecule. So obviously, and they're both obviously vertically integrated in the group, starting from the API manufacturing that we manufacture in our API plants in Campoverde di Aprilia in the central Italy and in Cork, Ireland. And this obviously, having the vertical integration, gives us all the obvious benefits competition-wise, because obviously we can compete on all levels with the generics. We have been successfully competing in different ways. Every market is different. In Germany, it's really on tenders. In certain other markets where promotion is still sensitive, we still promote the products. But we demonstrated with Zanidip that we've managed to kind of, keep at bay the generics and stabilize sales at the levels that I mentioned before. And so as a total franchise, we expect to stabilize at 180 million of sales throughout the plan. Residual erosion for generic competition will be mitigated by geographical expansion. This means that we are planning to still roll out in certain emerging markets the two products. We are also repatriating from distributors the products in markets where we're not present before. We're repatriating the products in order to sell them directly ourselves, and this obviously has a very positive impact on margins because obviously we can maintain more of the margin that before would stay with distributors. And in certain cases, but this is part of our business, is to obviously change distributors where we're not happy of their kind of performance. Moving on to Seloken, the metoprolol franchise. This is about 7.3% of our sales. As you know, we acquired this franchise from AstraZeneca. Did you say so?
Okay, it's in a different order.
You changed the order. I didn't change it. I have a printout here, and they're in the right order. And oh, you're right. You're right. Sorry. My mistake. I'm an inverse of a society.
Right. You want to talk about
go back to Ororek. Let's start with Ororek. Okay. Ororek, Marianne kissed me a bay. Ororek, Silodosin, this is our BPH product, and we consider it one of our corporate products. We did the development and registration for this product for Europe. It involved the originator is Kisei, a Japanese company, and basically this equates to about 7.4% of our sales. It's launched today in 39 markets. We have average market share of about 12.4% of BPH markets in 15 main countries. In 2018, we exceeded 100 million of sales, which was a very important milestone for us. We are expecting the generics to arrive at the beginning of 2020. I'm sure you know this. And we are expecting the generic impact to mainly take place in Italy, France, and Spain. However, we will keep on promoting, like we do for Zanidip and for the Lercanidip in France, we will keep promoting in promotion-sensitive countries where we see that we still, let's say, compete with the generics, even post-loss of exclusivity. And the plan assumes, for many reasons, but mainly linked to the renegotiation of the supply agreements with the originator and so forth, and obviously a reduction of AP investments in those markets where we will stop promoting because there's no way of promoting against the generics, we will see a lower impact on margin than on sales in our plan. Okay, so now I go back to Metoprolol. Metoprolol we acquired in July 17 from AstraZeneca following the divestiture of this product. This obviously was a very strategic acquisition for us. It was the biggest deal we ever did in Recordati. It allowed us, first of all, to bring in sales which are significantly accretive to the group because of leveraging of the product on our current business. Being a cardiovascular product, obviously it went very well with the targeted approach of Lercanidip in a promotion on the rest of our cardiovascular franchise. And it was very important strategically because it allowed us to complete our European footprint. And this had the benefits, two key benefits, so basically entering Benelux directly and the Nordic countries and also the Baltics, where we're not present until that time, because it allowed us to repatriate our products from the distributors that were managing our products in those markets with also further margin enhancement, and also to set up shop and build some critical mass in view of the launch of Cariprazine, Reagila, in these markets, where until that time we would have probably had to license it out to a local distributor in order to commercialize it. And obviously we feel that it's better for us and it's more in the interest of a group to be able to commercialize this product directly, also being a specialty product, very targeted to schizophrenia, obviously indicating schizophrenia, and therefore targeted to a very small kind of, let's say, segment of physicians, being the psychiatrist. Another big important strategic driver of this acquisition was obviously the fact that it allowed us to build and reinforce our critical mass in some of the Central Eastern European markets where this was needed. And we see the results now because this part of the business is performing extremely well. So obviously by building critical mass, we were able to kind of reinforce our promotional and selling structure in those countries, which vice versa also benefited the performance of the rest of the portfolio. So this, I mentioned, I think, everything, and like Fritz mentioned before, it's very important to say that when we acquired this product, the product was showing a decline, and following the integration in our promotional structures, the product was stabilized, and through a different, let's say, a more focused and careful management of the asset and promotion in markets where promotion had been abandoned for some years. And in fact, we expect the product to be stabilized around 100 million throughout the plan in sales. Livazo, pitavastatin, obviously a statin. This product is launched in 8 markets, has about 8.4% of the statin markets in the 6 main countries. We expect to continue growing double digit throughout 2019, and we're expecting, again, generics to arrive in 2020. We expect this generic impact mainly to impact us in Spain and Portugal because these are the two main countries of the franchise. And in selected countries, we will keep on promoting. However, again, like I mentioned before, in these two markets, for example, we will keep on promoting the product because they are promotion-sensitive markets and there's still space to kind of, you know, compete with generics also on a promotional level. So here we're planning to stabilize the product, to stabilize the product around 40 million, more or less. Okay? Which takes me to Reagila, to finish off, let's say, the corporate products of a specialty primary care business unit. Reagila, like Fritz mentioned before, is a product that we licensed in from Gedeon Richter, the Hungarian pharmaceutical company. It's for Western Europe and some selected other markets. Obviously, they kept the rights for their regional area of strength, which is Central Eastern Europe, going all the way down to Russia and CIS. This product was approved for the treatment of schizophrenia in 2017. It's got a very solid clinical profile, and it's one, if not the only product, actually, to have data that shows that it has efficacy in addressing positive and negative symptoms of schizophrenia, which is one of the most difficult areas of schizophrenia to treat. We started launching the product in 2018. We are rolling out the product in new markets also throughout 2019, and we expect this product to peak at sales around 100 million in sales. So obviously you're not seeing the peak sales here because the peak sales will arrive post-2021. This, I think it's an important step strategically also because it shows that we are pursuing the strategy of moving our primary business more to the specialty business, in the specialty primary care business, because obviously this is a highly specialized product. And it's also important to say that even in this context, even if it's a new product and a new target where we were not present before, we still followed the approach of Recordati of leverage of the organization. What do I mean by that? We did not go out and just create ex novo new schizophrenia or psychiatry promotional lines. What we did is that we went through a very careful analysis of our promotional effort in the different countries. We readdressed some of the FTEs, or the reps basically promoting on the current portfolios, and moved some of those. In certain select countries, we added a few more in order to kind of reach critical mass. So this was really another example of leveraging the organization, the current organization, to make space for a product which is actually out of the TAs where we were operating before. Okay? Takes me to the rest of the corporate products, which I will not go into detail. There's a lot of very nice brands here. It's important to remember, though, that we have an important part of our sales, which is made up of other corporate products. We sell in more than one market. These are the brands that we're talking about. There's 23 of them. 9 of them are OTC products and are OTC corporate products, so proprietary. And we expect this part of the business, which you were seeing before, the incidence on our total sales, to grow around mid-single digit over the plan period. So moving on, a bit more color on the OTC part of the business, which, like I mentioned before, is 16% of our sales. We expect this business to account to move from 16 to about 18% of our sales in 2021. Corporate brands in the OTC business that we manage account for about 55% of total OTC sales, and the main brands are Procto Glyvenol, which is for hemorrhoids. Another product is Sexa Spray, Cold and Flu. Kazen Lax is a laxative kind of words that are kind of mixed. How we will keep on developing this business, we will keep on doing life cycle management of the key brands, like everybody obviously that operates in the OTC business does, but not only on the corporate brands, but also on some selective key local brands, because we have also other local OTC brands, which are actually leaders in the respective markets in the countries where they're commercialized. So obviously we do also activities of life cycle management on that. We believe there is an opportunity to develop this business further in European markets. We believe there is an opportunity to cross-sell. So we are in the process of, and we've done it already in the past, but we keep on reviewing our local portfolios to see if we can bring some of these products to new markets, or mainly by putting them under umbrella brands, or strong umbrella brands that we have in other markets, if obviously there's a disease therapeutical fit. So there's a lot of activity on this. And we expect this product portfolio to keep on growing, again, mid to high digit, single digit throughout the plan period. So as you can see, it's an important part of the business, and we'll keep focused on developing it. Leads me to the rare disease business. So, the top brands you see at the top are the key brands of the rare disease business: Carbaglu, Cista Drops, global brands, Panhematin, North American, Latin brand, Cystadan, and Cystagon, also global. This, as I mentioned before, is about 16% of our net revenues. It is an area of important focus for the development of the organization, like I will explain a bit better later on in the presentation. We expect during the plan period to grow the sales of current portfolio double-digit annually over the period. We put in the plan the launch of Ledaga, the product that I mentioned before that we licensed in from Helsinn. We got the EU Commission approval following the EMA's acceptance of the post-approval commitments, which were completely resolved. We put in the plan the sales of Juxtapid that we bought from Agerion for Japan. And we expect our U.S. business to keep on growing single digit. This is 40% of the business, rare disease sales business, and which will be generated by 2021. And this is obviously an important area of focus for us for BD and M&A activities because we want to reinforce ourselves in the U.S. market. We are built into the plan also the launch of Carbaglu, the second indication organic acidemia for the U.S. market, as previously announced. And we expect the sales to start beginning in the plan period. And the Cista Drops also we built in the plan, the initial sales for Cista Drops in the U.S. And obviously, we expect Cista Drops to keep on developing and growing also in Europe because it's one of our key drivers for the rare disease franchise. It's also important to say, we felt that it was important also to kind of create one brand for our rare disease business because until now, we were operating in Europe, MENA, and new markets with other parts of the world with the Orphan Europe brand, which was the original company we acquired in 2007, whilst instead in the U.S., following the acquisition of the Lundbeck portfolio, we utilized the Recordati Rare Disease brand. And we felt that it was important now to put everything underneath, all our business in the rare disease segment underneath this brand, in order to give also clarity to our partners and the market in general, physicians and so forth, and patients. Okay, so I will move on. Mention on rare disease, on research and development, we built into a plan about 8 to 9% of sales to be allocated to R&D activities. The focus in specialty and primary care regarding R&D activities is to continue to focus on the development of products in specialty cares on a European basis through in-licensing activities and, where possible, co-development activities. Partnerships, and obviously, like I mentioned before, we will keep on doing activities for lifecycle management, not only on the OTC, which I mentioned before, but also on selected kind of key corporate brands in the specialty and primary care segment, or RX brands on certain specific local countries, champions, for example, our Methadone franchise in France, which is an important part of the revenues in France. We're obviously investing in lifecycle management to pursue new indications and new formulations for this franchise in the French market. Regarding treatment for rare diseases, like I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation, we are progressing with the current pipeline. None of these products, as I mentioned, are included in the plan because they will not come to market before 2021 or within 2021. This is a product, I think I don't need to go through them. You know them all very well because you know our pipeline. It's been already kind of disclosed for some time. We will continue. Our plan is to continue to identify new products to reinforce our pipeline. We believe that it's important to kind of start building and reinforcing for further our R&D pipeline in the rare disease segment where we feel that we have space to compete. And obviously, we will pursue this by doing what we've done until now, which is seeking opportunities and partnership with companies, universities, research groups, and so forth. Our approach will be to find, where possible, global brands to be developed, because obviously we feel that we want to bring in and invest in R&D activities for products that we will be able then to commercialize, if they make it to market, hopefully, on a global basis. And I think that is everything that I need to mention on this slide. Okay? So how will we accomplish the numbers that you've seen yesterday and that we will go through again later on in the presentation in a short while? So acceleration of group. So let's say a focus on the M&A strategy and focus area. So like I mentioned, licensing remains a very important part, starting with specialty and primary care. Licensing remains a very important part of our business model. So we will keep on seeking new product license opportunities in the specialty primary care business, for example, like we did with cariprazine. We feel that we are seen as a partner of choice for the markets we operate in because we are a one-stop shop. We can support our partners from the clinical development, the regulatory process, the market access, all the way to the commercialization, and also supply and distribution, obviously, and manufacturing if necessary, because we have a very strong manufacturing footprint. We will obviously look like it's in our discipline to favorable terms in terms of upfront consideration versus risk-sharing milestones compensation. I think this has always been important for us as an approach. And obviously, we will leverage the extensive distribution, clinical, regulatory platform that we have in order to kind of achieve new licenses for our SPC business. Regarding acquisitions, we will focus on the European opportunities because obviously this European regional opportunities all the way to Turkey and Russian CIS, where we can find material synergies, like it's in the DNA of a company. An example of this, for example, is the acquisition of Italchimici in Italy. We will pursue and look at other opportunities like metoprolol, the divestiture of AstraZeneca of metoprolol, because carving out tail end products which have not had any focused promotion for many years from the originators, and where we believe there are turnaround growth prospects that can be achieved through promotion. I think this is a real opportunity. So we've seen it with metoprolol, and so we are still looking for targets of this entity. And it's important to say that we are seeing a lot of activities from multinationals around this area because a lot of multinationals are following the path of AstraZeneca, but there have been other examples, as I'm sure you know, of divesting some non-core or what they don't consider anymore as non-core products, giving this opportunity to companies like Recordati to capitalize on this. We will look also for selective acquisitions of OTC brands in multiple or single territories. Examples of this have been obviously the acquisition of Tony Farm in France, the recent acquisition that brought into our portfolio Gincor, which is a stronger brand, OTC brand in France, or Natural Point with its Magnesio Supreme for Italy. Our strong integration capabilities for companies and products obviously is known, and obviously it will be a drive for this strategy. And obviously, as I said before, we will continue leveraging our extensive distribution platform and geographical reach in order to achieve a creative operational leverage for the SPC business, critical mass, and if interesting, also access new markets. Even though for the moment, I think it's very important that I clarify this, the SPC business, we're not looking to expand our geographical footprint. We are positioned as a regional player around Europe, Russia, CIS, Turkey, the Mediterranean basin, and this is where we want to stay. We're not planning to go and develop our SPC business in LATAM or Southeast Asia because this is not in our DNA. So we will capitalize where we are strong today. On the other hand, as I think I underlined plenty of times before, the global business for us is a rare disease business. So how we will accelerate growth for this business? Again, the two pillars are licensing in and partnerships and obviously acquisitions, M&A activity, which will become a more important part of our development strategy in the years to come. So for the licensing, obviously, we will keep on looking for to acquire licensing rights, preferably in late-stage opportunities, okay, because we are investing in the R&D pipeline with a certain kind of theoretical approach, but here we want to access the licenses for late-stage opportunities for obvious reasons. We will keep on developing, like I just mentioned, developing partnerships with research institutions, drug discovery companies, or other rare disease companies that don't have a presence in our markets or don't have a critical mass to develop their products on a global scale to reinforce further our pipeline. We feel, I mentioned this already, that we are a partner of choice and we are well positioned to kind of compete in this licensing arena, partnership arena. And to achieve this, we will leverage on a global footprint that we built in the recent years, which allows us to justify investment in licensing deals and M&A activities. Going to M&A activities, it's important to say, and I stress this, that yes, we are going to start looking for the acquisition of rare disease assets, but obviously, as in the discipline of a company that has always kind of, we've always demonstrated, with around contingent acceptable valuation. Okay, this is very important because we know that there are assets out there that can be very interesting, but sometimes evaluations are completely out of whack, to be very honest. But we also know that there are assets which are now starting to come to market and appear on the M&A arena, which allow actually more reasonable and approachable valuations that actually make the DCF and NPVs work, which is very important to us. So, for example, Juxtapid is an example of this, the acquisition of exclusive rights of Juxtapid in Japan, which for us was very important because we had just entered Japan in order, you know, on the back of a registration of our current portfolio. Japan for us is a very important market for the development of a group in the rare disease segment for the years to come. But we felt that this opportunity was very, very good for us because it allowed us to build critical mass and therefore being follow through with more investments to develop the whole portfolio in this country, which is obviously one of the key markets in the world. As I mentioned, the market rare disease treatments have shown extraordinary growth, and we think, like I'd like to mention the example of Juxtapid, that there will be more and more opportunities, both on a regional level, but I think also on a global level, to buy assets from companies which are refocusing out of the rare disease segment or for companies that don't have a critical mass to take this product global. And we've seen this, like I think, third bullet point, we've seen this M&A market for rare disease assets is really starting to bring opportunities on the table. And I don't think I need to repeat why we think we're well positioned to this. I said it enough times. Which takes me to the last part of my presentation, which will give you a bit more color on the financial assumptions behind the numbers that you saw in our press release yesterday, together obviously with what I've discussed until now. The group evolution. So group evolution, as I mentioned, continue the successful strategy that we've pursued until now, summed up from a new kind of focus, more focus on the rare disease business. Our objective is to bring the specialty and primary care business to account for 75% to 80% of revenues in 2021 and grow the rare disease business to 20 to 25% in 2021. Bolt-on acquisitions with acceptable valuations obviously are included in the plan, like was announced in the press release yesterday. And the revenue, organic revenue growth will be, like mentioned many times, would be complemented by accretive M&A. We will see faster local currency growth in emerging markets, goes without saying, but we have offset this by a negative assumption on local FX rates. So we've already built in our plan a negative impact from FX rates going through to 2021. 8% of group revenue, our accumulated annual growth to 2021 is expected on the revenue line. Regarding margins and profitability, we believe we can sustain margins throughout the plan, and we are looking to a 9% objective of group EBITDA accumulated annual growth. Regarding cash flow and dividends, very important point, obviously, for our investors. Cash generation is to exceed 100% of the group net income, and we will continue with our policy of investing 40% of the cash flow generated to be reinvested, obviously, in the development of the company, and a 60% payout dividend payout ratio policy to return cash to our shareholders. So this is not changing. Finally, an important point that obviously I think was quite obvious to the through the numbers that we saw on some of the analyst reports that promptly came out after our press release yesterday. We have built-in bolt-on acquisitions, and this implies approximately 1.5% EBITDA net debt increase in our plan. Okay. However, I think it's also important to say that we could further increase this net debt up to a maximum of 3x EBITDA, and obviously contingent upon high-quality asset acquisition opportunities, but only if they are strategic, high-quality asset opportunities. Okay? So we will keep a very disciplined approach on debt. I think that we already showing that we are taking already a commitment to bring our debt to 1.5x in the plan, but we are open if the opportunities arrive, which obviously pan out strategically very positively, or the prospects are very positive for the group, we are willing to go to a maximum, I repeat, maximum of 3x EBITDA net debt. And I think that is really... No, not my last slide, because then we have the numbers, but you know the numbers. So, but anyway, just to recap the numbers that we presented yesterday. So, as I mentioned, I mean, 1.7 billion approximately of net revenues, which equates to about 8% of cumulated annual growth between 18 and 21. 650 million of EBITDA, more or less, which equates to more or less 38% of incidence on net revenues. So again, showing and confirming margin sustainability, which shows a 9% growth in the period. EBIT of 560 million with incidence of 33%, again, margin sustainability, and the same for net income at 400 million with 23.5% approximately of incidence on net revenues, and that's 8.6% growth over the period. We believe these are solid targets, achievable targets. Not, you know, ricordati, I think we don't put numbers lightly on the table. So we feel that this is a plan that we can deliver over the period. And I think I've finished with this statement. I hope I clarified some of the questions you might have had. I'm sure you have plenty of other questions, so we can... open the Q&A session now, and we start off with, I thought it was going to be you, Joe, as always. So first we do, Marianne, correct me, we do the Q&A with the floor, and then we open the Q&A for the people connected online. Okay, so Joe, Walton.
Thank you, Joe Walton from Credit Suisse. Three quick questions, please. On your long-term plan, you've got roughly 8% sales growth. Would it be fair for us to assume that that's crudely 50% organic and 50% acquisition, or is that
correct.
A different ratio?
No.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Approximately correct.
Okay. Then can I also ask what you've assumed for things like the competition for panhematin in the US and whether that's...
Well, we obviously don't disclose assumptions or very specific assumptions on our key products, also for competitive reasons, because obviously I hope you can appreciate this. We believe there is obviously going to, if Givosiran does arrive, there will be an impact on the panhematin sales. However, on the other hand, we still believe, due to a variety of assumptions around pricing of Givosiran indication and so forth, we think that panhematin will still keep a space in the treatment of, let's say, the few acute episodes, the compensation episodes. Okay. So we have built in the plan an impact of Givosiran on the sales of panhematin. We'll not give you obviously the exact details because for competitive reasons, but we still feel that we have a space to still compete in this disease area with panhematin, even following the arrival of Givosiran.
I've got two other broader questions. If we see international reference pricing introduced in the US, do you think that will impact on the ability for you to in-license and freely priced products in Europe. Some companies have said that they are worried that European prices would then be re-imported back into the US. So I wonder whether you've got any covenants, for example, in for your cariprazine license, which would limit you so that you couldn't have it too low a price, or else you could find that that price obviously wouldn't impact you at all, but it would be impacted back.
We always have floor prices in our agreements with our with our partners, obviously, in order to mitigate this sort of effects or effects on a local level on pricing.
Okay.
So, yes.
And then my final question, at least this round, in terms of your ambition in orphan drugs, we saw Pfizer buy Therachon at the beginning of this week. That was a Swiss-based company, $350 million odd, but it was pretty high-tech rare diseases. Would you, given that a lot of rare disease work is now going with gene therapy and really high-tech stuff, can you just scope for us where you think you are best positioned to buy assets?
I mean, this is a very long conversation, Joe, but to put it very kind of briefly, considering the context we're in, I think that, you know, our approach would be to look for, we don't want to go into gene therapy. This is not an area where we plan to enter. We want to compete in the small molecule area, in the rare disease segment. Maybe biological, we will see. I mean, there are opportunities out there, but it's a really opportunity by opportunity kind of, you know, approach and investment thesis. It's very difficult. But let's say that gene therapy, I can exclude that we want to go into gene therapy. It's a bit completely out of scope for us. And obviously, we want to try and reinforce ourselves in where we're strong, which doesn't mean we will not look at other TAs. But let's say that generally, we want to keep on reinforcing ourselves in metabolic pediatric syndromes generally, even though there might be opportunities which may be kind of in different TAs, but still in the context of non-super high-tech gene therapy products where we can also look to kind of add on TAs to our portfolio. Okay? Does that answer the question? Okay. Thank you.
Hi, thanks. It's James Vane-Tempest from Jefferies. In the business plan, you talk about 8% growth. We just had a sort of roughly 50-50 organic and M&A. For memory, I think organic growth used to be around 5 or 6%. So I'm just curious what kind of foreign exchange headwinds is embedded into that guidance.
Okay,
you can take them one by one if you want, Fritz.
Okay, then. You have to take into consideration that in this half and a half, which means around 4% organic growth, we have included in 2020 the generic entry of competitor for Silodosin and for Urorexin. We have been able in the past sometime to be a bit above the 5%. Overall, our statement was to be able to grow our organic, our business by 3-5%. Then sometime we can be above. In the planned period, we have to manage two important item and subject, which is the entry of generic of for two important products, and then I think to be able to have a growth in the range, in the region of 4% in this environment in which we have to face and to compete against generics for pitavastatin and silodosin is a challenging object.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that.
But on the effects, point, we have built, I think, a substantial kind of effect, decline effect in our numbers.
Are you able to give us either the rates for key currencies, or is it like a 2% group? I'm just trying to understand what underlying growth is. People have different assumptions.
In our, for effects, we have built our plan considering a local currency growth, because we believe in both Turkish and Russia we can continue to have probably in Turkey a double digit growth local currency, and in Russia high single digit, but we have considered, we have offset this by these estimated effects, which was based on consensus and essentially on inflation estimation.
Exactly.
Then, Overall, we can think that we have included in our plan one negative exchange currency exchange effect in the region of 1.5% per year.
Exactly. That's great. Thank you. That's very helpful. Next question is, we've seen other private equity firms get involved in acquiring different platforms across Europe. You talk about reasonable multiples, but do you think multiples are going to have to go up? And how do you view the competitive landscape, given there's a lot of available capital?
We've always had to compete for assets. As I think I explained, a lot of these divestitures, I mean, believe it or not, especially when they come from larger corporations, the larger corporations put a lot of weight also on who they're, it's not only a matter of financials. It's also a matter of capabilities in order to kind of maintain the assets and take care properly of the assets. Especially the larger or mid-sized companies, they don't want to just give the asset to the best bidder, because many times some of the best bidders, especially some of the ones that you kind of referred to indirectly there, they don't have the capabilities, the track record, the infrastructure to kind of support this asset, which has, especially in the rare disease segment, has an important part of PR, let's say, component, because obviously they don't want to give assets which have direct implications. Most of these drugs are life-saving drugs, and so obviously the patient advocacy groups are very important, patients are very important, and so they tend to weight the capabilities and the track record of the companies bidding for them as importantly, let's say, as a financial kind of consideration that is put on the table. So it's a balance. So we feel that we have, yes, there is competition. We've always had competition for many, many years on assets and on the M&A field. But we're still here, and I think we've demonstrated that we can deliver.
Thanks. My last question just for this round is, you talked about sort of spending more on R&D. Just curious, given the focus intensity, do you expect spend to go up as a percentage of revenues, or how should we think about the level of spending in your plan?
I mean, like we mentioned in the plan, our objective is to invest about 8 to 9% of our revenues in R&D. This is what we built in the plan. It goes without saying that we also say that we want to kind of increase our pipeline. At the same time, R&D is also linked to the development kind of cycle of the products in the clinical development. So there are years where we spend a bit more than the year after. And generally, I mean, we're not going to become an R&D-driven company. Let's be very clear about this, because this is not going to, it's not Recordatis. We want to tap on the innovation coming from the outside, and this is what we'll keep on doing. So I would not say that you should expect, our R&D activities to change substantially from what we put in the plan and declare in this presentation. Okay. Also, the type of R&D we do and the type of product that we're putting is, remember, we are operating, our R&D is driven mainly, primarily from the rare disease segment, where the R&D spend is a very different thing from the spend that you do in developing and doing R&D activities on the specialty primary care, large therapeutical areas products. Okay.
Casey Harikatla from Goldman Sachs. I have two questions, both related to M&A. The first one, if we look at the primary and specialty care segment, how should we think about acquisitions? Would you prefer to have metropolitan kind of acquisitions which contribute big and stay there? Or will it be something like Reagila, which will continue to grow for a very long time, but probably not contribute much in the next 18 to 24 months?
Okay. The presentation, I think, clearly states that we want to do a bit of both. Recordati has been, let's be very honest, we are a focused company, we know where our capabilities are and so forth, and we always pursued, growth with a lot of focus, but we are also an opportunity. We follow an opportunistic approach. I mean, we were not in schizophrenia and in psychiatry, and we went after cariprazine because, as we know very well, in the specialty primary care business, there is a drought of innovation coming for these big therapeutical areas. So we're trying to move more to the specialty area. So we will still pursue that because we see a role for licensing products that maybe are not going to kind of give us, a lot of upside in the next 18 to 24 months, but in the long term, for us, they're important growth drivers. Okay, and Cariprazine's numbers and the peak sales I mentioned before, I think, are important in ensuring this. At the same time, we will still be looking for opportunities as a metoprolol. We keep on getting dossiers regarding opportunities. Not all opportunities are the same. Sometimes you get very nice-looking brands, you know, very famous brands like Celicon was, come to the table, but then when you start deep diving into the numbers, into the prospects, and for a variety, a lot of variables, they don't pan out to be so interesting. So we continuously look for accretive opportunities, and we will keep on looking at it because I think it's an important component in our growth strategy for the SPC business, but also for the total group, because obviously the cash generation generated from the SPC business helps also the M&A development, BD activities, and growth of the rare disease business. Okay.
And a very related question. In the rare disease segment, will you be focused on phase 3, phase 2 assets, or something like a juxtapate which will contribute in the near term?
We're looking, pipeline related. Let's say that we look from earlier stage, obviously in the context of rare diseases. There's a lot of rare diseases, as you know better than I do. Casey, this product, you know, rare disease can become multi-billion products. This is not where we're competing because there's other players in those segments that can compete and have better chances of competing than us. We will look for late-stage opportunities. Late-stage opportunities, and we're also looking for marketed opportunities in the rare disease segment. As I mentioned before in the slide regarding acceleration of growth, there is opportunities coming out on the market due to the refocusing of some players in the area that have decided to kind of pursue other and focus their efforts in other areas, TAs whatsoever. And so we think that there's space for us to kind of compete effectively, but we are looking for opportunities, late-stage opportunities, especially if it's an M&A-driven kind of asset deal, and more than that, we're also looking out for a product we already have marketed sales and that can obviously start kind of contributing to the P&L from day one.
Can I add something on this?
Yeah.
You have seen that in the group evolution in terms of margin and profitability, the assumption is to maintain the current profitability, then, which means that essentially our M&A is more focused in identifying growing opportunity, which could be in the rare diseases, could be then established product. We continue to be interested because this is an important contribution for our margin. But today, the focus of the M&A is to try to find asset, which also an opportunity for growth. Then. That's the reason why in our business case, in our business plan, there is no, as a base, the achievement of one increase of full profitability, because we want to buy something with growth opportunity.
Okay.
Bruno Permuti from Bank AMI. A question related to the acquisition from a rough glance to the number. It seems like you expect to have more or less between 800 and 900 million capex for acquisitions for additional sales in the 150 to 200 million over the time horizon. I would like to understand if these are more or less the numbers that you factor in your plan, or I'm losing something. And another question, if I may, is on Juxtapid, only to understand the time horizon of the possible contribution to your profit and loss in terms of revenue.
Okay, so the first question...
I'll start with the easier one, which is Juxtapid, okay? Japan.
So the first one is even easier, because, okay, your assumption is the right one. Okay, then
I
we have implicit...
Kind of,
no,
elaborate,
because
but, okay.
If you want, we can elaborate.
No, let's not elaborate. It's a good answer. Now, going back to Juxtapid, our forecast is to reach peak sales of 20 million. 20 million peak sales. Peak sales, which are not in the plan, the peak sales. Peak sales. It takes time to build products. Okay?
Hi, it's James from Jefferies again. Just two follow-ups, please. On Reaglia, I'm just curious what potential you see for Reaglia and other indications and whether those are included in your 100 million peak estimate. And then the second question is, my sense is that in UK and Germany, you're subscale compared to some other markets. So just wondering what your expectations are to grow there.
With Reaglia?
So overall in UK and Germany. Sorry, I should probably split the question. So the first one's on Reaglia in terms of other indications.
Germany,
of
we don't think we're subscale. You said that Germany...
Compared to your other markets, I guess, in terms of infrastructure.
No, we think that we are well-positioned in Germany. I mean, we always reinforce one of the key markets in Europe, so obviously we're always looking for also local potential deals to reinforce our further build our critical mass in the country, but I think we have enough scale. I mean, we have a subsidiary that's 100 million of sales, so it's kind of fits well with our big subsidiaries, let's say, in the SPC area. Reaglia UK, yes, obviously Reaglia UK is we have re-entered UK on the premise of launching Reaglia, because obviously we believe the UK market is an important market for the is considered to be an important market in the schizophrenia field. Today, we have, obviously, in this market, we only have the residual sales of our lercanidipine franchise, which is very genericized in this market. So we created a very targeted, focused sales team with a commercial head to start, putting the Reaglia on the market. This takes time. So it's national formularies, as you know. It takes time to put them in. So it's quite a slow uptake for this market. But so we followed the usual approach of Recordati of, caution. So, yes, we put what we feel is a necessary structure in order to kind of bring Reaglia to the market and the necessary resources without, however, kind of taking too much of a big step. There was another question. Sorry, James. Maybe
Reaglia and other indications.
Other indications, Reaglia, we did not build anything in the plan. No. We did not build anything in the plan. There is activity going on, but we did not build anything in the plan. For now, we have schizophrenia. Full stop. Okay.
Hi, thanks for the presentation. It's Naveed Mukhtar from PGIM. Just a few questions on the rare disease business. In your plan, you mentioned double-digit growth. Can you explain if you expect a 50-50 split in organic and inorganic growth coming in from there, or if not, what the rough split is? And secondly, just in the first quarter trading, the revenue growth was 2.5%. And I appreciate that there was generic competition coming in, but maybe you can split out that generic competition impact and potential FX impact to explain what the underlying growth was in the rare disease segment in the quarter.
Sorry, the first question was related to the organic growth and contribution for M&A. We have an objective, a target, which is for the overall business, which is not specific for the orphan business, because we have, on the other hand, this assumption that we want to buy assets in both, in the special care and in rare diseases, but we don't want to have a so detailed target on the specific, how do we want to increase our business in the orphan arena, because this is obviously based on opportunity that we can find going forward in the M&A.
So we have a war chest to invest.
Exactly.
We expect the war chest to generate a certain kind of revenues and profitability, but it's allocated to the whole group. So if you want a target on organic growth or what we expect our organic growth, you go to slide 29 and you see obviously your objective for the rare disease business approximately.
And then could you repeat the second question?
Of course, the telephone is
the growth in first quarter. What is the underlying?
I have not heard the number, let's say in this way.
I don't have a number here.
The underlying business is growing, but because in particular for Cosmezen, let me comment in this way, the first quarter last year was impacted by less extent what was the impact going forward. And then if we compare quarter by quarter, we have an important. Then overall, the business is growing, but I'm not here with me the exact number. I don't want to give number which are not the correct one. And if you want, like, we can go ahead, identify the number, and then we can send to you the real number in terms of underlying growth.
Joe Walton from Credit Suisse. On cariprazine, could you tell us how you've managed to price this product in Europe? Other companies with new schizophrenia drugs have found that some countries have been very reluctant to give premiums over relatively old products. And I know when you initially start, you have a fantastic time. You can do what you damn well like in Germany. But then that comes to an end, you know, within 12 months or so. So how have you been finding those negotiations? Because that's a relatively new thing for you to be doing. My second question is, and I don't know, maybe there are some CVC people here that I wouldn't recognize. So I don't know how easy this answer will be. But if you could give us an idea of perhaps by how much the number of contacts that you've got in the various various opportunities have gone up. I mean, we on the outside assume that CVC's network is feeding you more opportunities than you would otherwise have had, and that's one of the benefits that we see as shareholders in the firm of having CVC as a partner here. But I wonder if you could tell us what benefit you have felt that they've brought to the business.
So, aside from this answer, which is a bit more straightforward, and then I let Fritz enjoy himself with a very pretty answer. We started quite recently. We basically started operating with CVC as a majority because the closing was in December. Okay, so we are a public company. Before the closing was done, CVC was not involved, and there was because there was an MTO that had to be taken through. So we were very disciplined and very serious about handling the relationship pre-closing. Closing was basically during the Christmas, just before the Christmas holidays. January we started, we created a new board of directors. There was a lot of governance kind of things that had to be put in place. We are getting a flow. I can confirm to you there is a flow of opportunities coming from CVC. On the other hand, Ricordati is pretty well on the map already. So, I think AstraZeneca deal already helped us to kind of get on the map for the sort of kind of deals of those sort, and also in the rare disease segment. So there are, I can tell you that since CVC entered, we have had for sure them bringing stuff on the table or opportunities on the table that would not have come to us. But will I tell you where these opportunities will go? If they will come to fruition, today is too early because, but like many opportunities that come also to Ricordati, we've seen before CVC took the majority stake in the company, not all of them went to fruition. But there is definitely an increase of opportunities coming on the table due to CVC's global network around. That I can confirm for sure, yeah. Okay.
It's my for cariprazine. Okay, let's say that we are pleased by our market access activity for cariprazine. This was also my statement in the last conference call. Then we have launched in Germany. We had this very good price. We have now renegotiation of the price, and the new price, which is the final one, we are very pleased and is above our expectation. We have had, it was the average, which was really a very high price, but the final one after the negotiation is even above. We have now had the reimbursement in Italy, in Nordic, in the UK, and here again we are pleased by the price that we have obtained. We are now in the process for having the price in Spain, and we are very positive on this. France remains a difficult environment because, you know, in terms of market access, France is a very difficult market. Then, having said that...
Sorry, let me just add, but however, I know what you're referring to, yes. Because, Maxi, I mean, we're talking about two different products. I mean, cariprazine is an ex-novo new molecule. The other one was basically a me-too kind of product as far as we're concerned. So we think that our clinical profile for cariprazine is definitely better than the Otsuka-Lundbeck profile. And so this is why we think we have a better chance to kind of, you know, for the PNR activities and market access activities. Said that, Europe is difficult. There are kind of, you know, barriers that need to be overcome. France is a difficult market where to negotiate. We are working on it. We think we have elements to bring the product to market. It's a process which requires time and which is ongoing. So if you want to add
I wanted to comment on our solid clinical profile
that
allow us to have these good market access results.
Exactly. This is really the only product. I mean, obviously, we don't have a specific indication in positive and negative symptoms, okay? But it is mentioned in the SPC. I mean, it is a recognized benefit of the product. It's the only product that has data showing this efficacy. So this is recognized. I can tell you that the community of key opinion leaders and physicians is extremely excited and interested in the product. Maybe in our pre-marketing and obviously market access activities and that we're progressing in the different markets. Rarely do I remember a product that enticed so much kind of interest from the physician community because they were really waiting. They're really waiting for this product. So there's a lot of elements in motion, but we are confident that we will deliver on this because of the clinical profile of the product. Okay. Any question? Any more questions from the floor? No more questions. So shall we open the line for questions coming from those of you connected?
This is the conference operator. The first question is from Martino De Ambrogi of Equita. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. The first question is on the orphan drugs potential acquisitions because... Andrea, I remember in your last official presentation of targets, you ruled out acquisitions in this field. So what do you mean for interesting opportunities mentioned in slide number 33? And what has really changed in your view for these options? And I have two other questions later.
Okay, one second. I'll answer this one first. What has changed? It's been 3 years, first of all. The company has changed substantially. Our financial capability has changed over the last 3 years, notwithstanding CVC's entry. And with CVC's entry, we feel that we can be even a bit more ambitious on pursuing rare disease M&A assets or assets coming through the M&A kind of process in the rare disease segment. So we feel that the business is a good business. 3 years ago, we still felt it was a good business, but obviously we are a company that like takes development, you know, with discipline. And over the years, last 3 years, we feel that we've become even more convinced that this is the area for where to really generate growth, and I repeat, growth for the group in the years to come. So they were willing to invest more in this area. Also, as I said before, I think it was pretty clear, we feel that there's more opportunities coming to the market than in the past at more reasonable valuations. There are still opportunities coming to the market at non-reasonable valuations, but this honestly applies also to the specialty care segment. So it's very difficult to generalize in the flow of opportunities in M&A, let them be in SPC or in a rare disease. But we are seeing more opportunities. We see more opportunities, definitely more opportunities than what we used to see in the past.
Okay, thank you. The second question is on the like-for-like growth. So it's very clear 50-50 acquisitions and like for like, but I see another way to find what is your underlying assumption for the like for like sales in 2021, because in your slide 28, you are indicating OTC sales around 280 million, which are 18% of sales. So if I calculate 1.55 billion of sales in 2021, am I right in assuming this as the underlying like-for-like sales growth?
Could you repeat your calculation?
Yeah, no, in slide 28, where the OTC, where there is the OTC business projection.
Business, okay,
yeah.
OTC business, sorry.
Yeah, it's, roughly I derive 280 million in sales in 2021 that you indicate being 18% of sales, of the group sales, I suppose, like for like. So by dividing 280 by 18%, it comes 155 billion for sales.
It's not easy to go through your calculation, but if we, I think we can reiterate that in our business plan, our assumption in terms of organic growth, then to be completely open, is in the region of 4.5%, which is roughly half of what is our 7.9% CAGR for the period, including M&A.
Okay, and the...
To do all the other calculations that you want.
I will call you, thank you. But for margins, we assume flattish margins, like for like.
We assume what?
Yes.
As a percentage on sales.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yes, because as I said, in this M&A approach, we will be very pleased to find the possible other Metoprololo acquisition, which has an important accretive contribution. But today the commitment is to be focused more in asset, in both OTC or specialty care, specialty and primary care business in the business development area, and in the orphan area, in which there is a growth opportunity behind. And we don't expect the M&A to contribute to a further improvement. We don't expect it to be dilutive. And therefore, this statement, which is to maintain our margin going forward, is linked to both the contribution of M&A, but also is a statement which is valid for our organic business.
Okay, if I may follow up on the M&A, it's clear you have an opportunistic behavior, but what could be the opportunity convincing you to push the debt to EBITDA to the cap of 3? What is the priority? A big portfolio opportunity, a therapeutic area, geographical expansion opportunity. So what could be the reason justifying the increase to EBITDA?
I wish I had a crystal ball. Honestly, anything which is strategically viable for a company to generate growth and reinforce the group is an attractive opportunity that could, but let it be a portfolio product, let it be a single franchise, let it be a company. Honestly, it's I can't foresee
no.
the future.
No. Okay. Okay.
It's not a matter of being opportunistic. I mean, we're operating in the rare disease segment. We said more or less what we want. I said before that yes, obviously we are prioritizing areas where we already operate, where we see our position is a position of strength, metabolic pediatric disorders, and where we can obviously achieve better kind of integration and synergies. But at the same time, history teaches us that you have to also look at opportunities which are out of your comfort zone. So we will look at stuff if the opportunity looks to be a high quality asset opportunity which has not only financial but also strategic elements that support it, we will look at them. And but today we don't have anything which is which I can use as an example to kind of give you a clearer answer. But I wouldn't keep on saying that, yes, we are opportunistic, but we're not only opportunistic. I mean, this is a bit of an overstatement, I think. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Let me comment on this. Then I think there is a clear statement of the company today to slightly increase our debt based on opportunity, and then we are very confident to be able to achieve this business plan, which implies a slight increase of our debt. But we have also included this statement, which is a further increase of the debt, just to say that the focus of the company is the growth, and then if we are able to find opportunity for growth, there is space up to, this is the message, there is space up to, because we for sure we don't want to go more than 3x EBITDA, to follow other opportunities that we believe are quality asset acquisition opportunity and so on. Then the base plan is to continue to reinvest a bit more of the free cash flow generation, which is something new compared to what was our previous statement in the previous business plan. And but we want also to have flexibility in terms of possible other acquisition, following our normal, very prudent and approach in terms of valuation of the asset, and then we could even slightly improve above of this 1.5. 3x is the maximum level of debt that we can achieve. That's the message that is clear in this statement.
Very clear. Thank you.
The next question is from Ines Sali of Amundi. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I have a question about the methadone. From my understanding, it's a molecule applied to several medicines, and it represents 2.5% of your revenue. But it belongs to the opioid family. I would like to know if there are regulatory risks identified, and how can this impact your revenue in the next future? Thank you.
Now, the impact of potential regulatory risk on the revenues, you asked, right?
Yes.
Okay. No, I mean, this product is utilized for drug addiction, for heroin addiction. It's a controlled substance, de facto, in France, highly regulated, and which serves, obviously, an important social, function to the treatment of heroin addicts in France. So this is not a product that we utilize and that we promote in to get against opioids. And so we don't see any regulatory risk on this, and therefore risk on the prospects for the product. It's a very stable franchise for us in France.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
There are no more questions registered at this time from the conference call.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. I don't know if there's anyone else here on the floor that wants to ask something else. If not, we can close the session. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
Thank you.